All his levels are perfect, and there's no sign of any infection or disease. Moishe's even lost a little weight, and Bob says to tell you that you must be doing something right with his diet. But why is Moishe so tired all the time? Hannah asked her. Bob wants me to remind you that Moishe is getting older, and he'll be sleeping more now. There's another thing, too. Cats tend to nap when they're bored. There's also another possibility.
What's that?
Moishe is staying awake because something has engaged his interest during the day while you're gone, and that makes him tired and want a nap.
Like what?
Perhaps a mouse somewhere in your condo, or a bug he wants to catch, or even something he sees outside the window. Bob suggests that you leave the television or radio on for him to keep him company while you're at work.
I already do that, Sue.
Then don't worry about it. Cats go through phases, just like people do. Their sleep habits aren't always the same. Moishe may be prowling around at night because he hears something moving in the walls, or a noise in the attic, or something happening in another unit. Bob ran every test in the book on him. If there were anything wrong with Moishe, he would have found it.
Thanks, Sue. That's a big relief.
See you soon. Hannah handed the receiver to Michelle to hang up. Moishe's fine, she reported. Sue said there's nothing wrong with him. Hannah had no sooner picked up her muffin again when there was a knock on the door. The two sisters exchanged glances, and then both of them laughed.
Mike?
Michelle guessed.
Probably. It sounded like his knock. I guess his food door is working early this morning.
Michelle got to her feet and hurried to the door.
Hi, Mike, she said, pulling it open.
You didn't look through the peephole, Mike said, frowning slightly. Always look through the peephole to make sure you know who's knocking.
I knew, Michelle told him. Both of us knew. Come in and have a muffin, Mike. Hannah's in the kitchen.
Mike looked as if he wanted to give her a short lecture about taking precautions before opening the outside door, but the lure of muffins was too great. He just said,
Well, please be more careful in the future,
and went to join Hannah at the table.
What are those?
He asked, watching as Hannah put the last bite of muffin in her mouth.
Orange marmalade-filled oatmeal muffins.
I don't know if I like orange marmalade or not.
You'll like it in these muffins, Hannah promised, getting up to pour him a mug of coffee. She took two more muffins out of the pan, wrapped them in a napkin, and delivered the coffee and the muffins to Mike. Try them, she advised. You'll like them.
They smell great, but Mike tried one of those little packets of orange marmalade on some toast when I went out for breakfast at the corner tavern, and I didn't like it.
This is different.
How's it different?
It's different because you're going to love it. All you have to do is take a bite, and you'll see.
Okay, if you say so.
Mike bit into the muffin, and a surprised expression crossed his face.
It's good.
Michelle came into the kitchen just in time to hear Mike's comment.
Of course it's good. I made them. Where's Lonnie? I thought you two were working together today.
We are. He's going to meet...
Mike stopped speaking as there was another knock at the door.
Me here, he finished the sentence. That's probably him now.
As Michelle turned to go to the door, he called after her,
Look through the peephole, or Lonnie will give you an even longer lecture than the one that I gave Hannah.
Orange marmalade-filled oatmeal muffins. Preheat oven to 400 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position. That's 400 degrees Fahrenheit, not a mistake. 1 1/3 cups all-purpose flour. Pack it down in the cup when you measure it. 3/4 cup rolled oats, not instant. I used Quaker's Quick 1 minute. 1/3 cup white granulated sugar. 1/4 teaspoon salt. 2 teaspoons baking powder. 1 large egg beaten. Just whip it up in a glass with a fork. 3/4 cup whole milk. 1/4 cup vegetable oil. I used Wesson vegetable oil. 6 tablespoons orange marmalade. Prepare a 12-cup muffin tin by spraying the cups with Pam or another nonstick cooking spray, or lining them with cupcake papers. Place the flour in a large bowl. Add the rolled oats and mix them into the flour with a fork from your silverware drawer. Add the white sugar and mix it in thoroughly. Use the fork to mix in the salt and the baking powder. In another bowl, combine beaten egg, whole milk, and vegetable oil. Mix them together thoroughly. I used a whisk to do this. Add the wet ingredients, egg, milk, vegetable oil, in the second bowl to the dry ingredients, flour, oats, sugar, salt, baking powder, in the first bowl. Stir until the dry ingredients are moistened. Don't overstir. This will make the muffins tough. Drop 1 tablespoon of batter into each muffin cup and spread it out with a rubber spatula to cover the bottom of the cup. Drop 1/2 tablespoon of orange marmalade on top of the batter. Try to drop it in the center of the cup so that it is surrounded by the batter you spread on the bottom. When you have done this in every muffin cup, fill each cup with batter, distributing it as evenly as you can. Lisa and I do this with a scooper down at the cookie jar. Gently run the blade of a table knife around the edge of the batter in each muffin cup to seal the orange marmalade in the center of the muffin. There may be some leakage, but as long as you used cupcake papers, you will be able to get the muffins out of the tin. Bake your orange marmalade-filled oatmeal muffins at 400 degrees Fahrenheit for approximately 20 minutes or until they are a nice golden shade of brown on top. These muffins are best served warm. You can also bake them, store them, and reheat them in the microwave to warm them later. Make sure you have plenty of softened salted butter for those who want it and lots of coffee or cold milk. Yield 12 delicious muffins. If you invite Mike for breakfast, you'd better mix up 2 batches. Chapter 26. 20 minutes later, after the consumption of a total of a dozen muffins by Michelle, Hannah, Mike, and Lonnie, the two sisters were in their respective cars on their way to the cookie jar to pack up the cookies and cookie bars they'd baked for Sally's holiday gift convention. "Looks like Lisa's here already," Hannah said, gesturing toward the sporty red car that Lisa's husband, Herb, had given her the previous year as a surprise Christmas gift. "Marge and Aunt Nancy are here early, too," Michelle told her. "I went around the block and I noticed that their cars were parked in front. I wonder what time they all got here." Hannah unlocked the back kitchen door, and the two sisters stepped into the warmth. Once they'd hung their parkas on hooks by the back door and walked into the main part of the kitchen, they stopped and stared in disbelief. "Good heavens," Hannah breathed, staring at the racks of cookies and cookie bars that filled the two bakers' racks. Additional baked goods were spread over every flat surface in the kitchen, and as they watched, Marge and Lisa carried racks of cooled cookies into the coffee shop. "Hi, girls," Aunt Nancy greeted them. "Hello, Aunt Nancy," Hannah managed to say, and then she pointed to the filled baker's racks. "What's all this?" "The cookies and cookie bars you're going to take to the convention hall." "But what time did you get here?" Michelle asked. "We all met in the kitchen at 3:30. We talked about it on the phone last night, and we decided to give you two a good send-off. You'll be working hard all day, and since you had some dough mixed up, we decided to bake it for you." Hannah looked at the baker's racks again. "But it looks like you baked a lot more than we mixed up before we left last night." Aunt Nancy laughed. "Of course we did. There were a couple of recipes we wanted to bake, and one new recipe we needed to try." "Which recipe is new?" Michelle asked. "We're calling it Chocolate Caramel Bar Cookies, and it's based on my friend Lynn Jackson's Salted Caramel Bar Cookies. We got the idea the last time we made Lynn's recipe, and Lisa was unwrapping the caramels. She said there used to be a couple of chocolate caramels in with the rest of the plain caramels, and her mother saved those for her." "So you decided to make up a recipe with chocolate caramels?" Hannah asked the obvious question. "Yes, all three of us worked on it, and that's why we wanted to try it this morning. Will you test it for us, to see if you like it?"
Of course, Michelle said quickly. Hannah nodded. We've already had breakfast, so one of the new bars can be dessert. Aunt Nancy laughed. Dessert for breakfast. I like the concept. Go pour yourselves some coffee and get one for me, too. I'll see if our new bar cookies are cool enough to cut.
Michelle and Hannah seated themselves at the workstation with fresh cups of coffee for themselves and one with cream and sugar for Aunt Nancy. A few moments later, Aunt Nancy walked over with a plate of bar cookies.
"Here they are," she said. "Please take one and taste it. We want to know if you think we should add them to the coffee shop menu."
Hannah took one bite and nodded. "Please add them," she said, and then, rather than go into detail, she took another bite.
"I agree," Michelle said.
Aunt Nancy took a bar cookie from the plate she'd filled and tried them herself.
"Me too," she said with a smile. "The customers will love these."
"Are they difficult to make?" Hannah asked her.
"Not at all. As a matter of fact, you save a little time because you don't need to unwrap as many caramels. On the first batch, we used caramel ice cream topping mixed with a 6-ounce-by-weight bag of chocolate chips. And on the second try, we used 35 caramels instead of the 50 in the original recipe, the same amount of chocolate chips, and 1/4 cup of whipping cream. Both ways worked just fine."
"Then you didn't have to look for actual chocolate caramels?" Hannah asked.
"No. And both ways work and save time, too. We don't think it gets any better than that."
After they each had another chocolate caramel bar cookie apiece, Aunt Nancy helped Hannah and Michelle pack up the cookie truck. They had decided to leave half of the new cookie bars at the cookie jar so that Lisa, Aunt Nancy, and Marge could try them out on the customers. Hannah and Michelle took the other half with them and headed off to the Lake Eden Inn.
"It's a beautiful morning," Michelle said as they turned off on the road that led around Eden Lake. "Just look at the sun glinting off the snow."
"Michelle, it's a yard light. It's winter. The sun's not up yet."
"Oh, I think I might need more sleep. But look at the yard light glistening on the branches of the pine trees. I wonder if that's where they got the inspiration for tinsel."
"Dad told me that way back in Great-Grandma Elsa's day, tinsel was actually made from shiny lead. They used to call them icicles."
"Why did they stop making them out of lead?" Michelle asked her.
"I'm not completely sure, but I'll bet it had something to do with lead poisoning. Or maybe the fact that people were supposed to save scrap metal for the war effort."
"I remember Great-Grandma Elsa telling us about the old rusty tractor that they hauled out from behind the barn and gave to a scrap metal drive."
"Yes, farm equipment was heavy, and there were shortages of metal to make tanks and ships and all sorts of things. Some people even removed non-essential parts from their cars and donated those."
"Like what?"
"Bumpers. And in some cases, even fenders. People went through their homes to donate anything made out of metal, and some families tore down wrought iron fences and donated those. Most families had someone close to them fighting in the war. A neighbor, a son, a nephew or cousin. Scrap drives became very important to them because everybody wanted to help the soldiers."
"Were there scrap drives for other things besides metal?"
"Oh, yes. There were scrap drives for rubber, too. Big trucks came to collect old tires because they could be recycled and used on troop trucks and jeeps. New tires were in very short supply here at home, and people did all sorts of things to patch them up and use them longer. Paper was another thing that was in short supply, and schools held paper drives to collect old magazines, newspapers, and anything made out of paper. There were drives for anything that was in short supply. And everything that could be recycled was recycled."
Michelle looked thoughtful. "We're doing that again now. We separate glass and metal and paper in our trash so that it can be recycled. We have a special can for recyclables at the house in St. Paul."
"And we have a separate dumpster in the garage at the condo," Hannah told her. "We started that a couple of months ago. It's the blue dumpster."
"I saw that, and I was going to ask you about it. I figured it wasn't for regular trash.
"We're here,"
Hannah said as they pulled up by the back door to the convention center. "Sally said we can use this spot to unload."
"Great. Back in, Hannah, but leave enough room for you to open the back and stand there. If you hand things up to me, it'll go a lot faster."
"Now it'll go twice as fast," a male voice shouted out, and Hannah and Michelle turned to see Lauren standing on the loading dock.
"Hi, Lauren," Hannah said as she backed up the truck and got out. "Are you sure you have time to help us?"
"I've got time. Just hand things up to me. I brought a cart and we can push it to your booth."
The loading dock wasn't that high, and it was a simple matter to hand things up to Lauren so he could stack them on the cart. When they were through, Michelle went with Lauren to help him unload at their booth, and Hannah moved the cookie truck to their designated parking spot. With all three of them working, it still took a while to unload at the booth and arrange things for display. Sally had already filled the 2 30-cup coffee pots with water, and she'd even filled the baskets with coffee grounds. Hannah found the eggs they'd brought, cracked one into the grounds, and stirred it in, and started one pot of coffee, while Michelle finished writing the names and prices of their bakery items on the big whiteboard that Sally had provided.
"Done," Michelle said, just as Hannah turned on the coffee.
Hannah glanced at her watch. "Perfect," she said. "It's 8:40, and we're all ready to go. Let's walk over and greet our neighbors." They started with Gary, the man that Sally had introduced when she had shown them their booth. Gary was busy unpacking another box of handmade Christmas ornaments, but he put the box down in order to greet them.
"Good to see you again, Hannah," he said, and then he turned to Michelle. "You two are here bright and early."
"That's only because we had help unpacking," Michelle told him. "Otherwise, we'd still be setting out cookies."
"How about a cup of coffee?" Hannah asked him. "It should be ready in about 5 minutes."
"Thanks for the offer, but I don't drink coffee."
"We have orange juice and apple juice," Michelle offered him an alternative.
"I really like apple juice. Let me pay for it now."
"Oh, there's no charge for neighbors," Hannah said quickly, as Gary reached in his pocket. "Come over and get more any time you want."
"Or holler over at us and one of us will bring it to you," Michelle added. "After all, there are two of us and you're handling your booth all by yourself."
"We'll give you cookies, too," Hannah told him. "Do you like raisins and almonds?"
"Yes, almonds are my favorite nut."
"Then we'll bring over two of our raisin and almond crunch cookies to go with your apple juice." Once they delivered the cookies and a paper cup of apple juice to Gary, Hannah and Michelle walked over to the booth on the other side of theirs.
"Hello," Hannah said to the two women who were arranging holiday-patterned scarves in a colorful array on one of their shelves. Their books were already displayed on shelves, and there was a rack at the side of their booth for samples of their boxed Christmas and Thanksgiving cards.
"We're your neighbors in the cookie jar booth," Michelle told them.
"Hello," one of the women turned to greet them with a smile. "You must be Hannah Swenson. Sally told me all about you." She turned her smile on Michelle. "And you must be Hannah's sister, Michelle."
"That's right."
"Well, I'm Dorothy, and this is my sister, Faye."
Faye turned around to give a friendly wave.
"Nice to meet both of you. Are you girls all ready to open?"
"Yes, and we've already made coffee. Would you like us to bring you a cup?"
"Oh, yes," Dorothy responded quickly. "We didn't have nearly enough coffee this morning, right, Faye?"
"Right."
"Do you take cream or sugar?" Michelle asked them.
"Yes, both, please."
Again, Dorothy was the one to respond.
"How about a couple of our chocolate chip crunch cookies?" Hannah asked them.
"Yes, but just one for me," Dorothy said. "I'm watching my calories."
Michelle turned to Faye.
"One or two?"
"Two, please. I'm watching my calories, too."
She paused and gave a little laugh. "I'm watching them very carefully as they go straight to my hips." Both Hannah and Michelle laughed, and Dorothy just shook her head.
"My sister, the comedian," she commented.
"We'll be right back with cookies and coffee," Michelle promised, and the two sisters walked back to their booth. Once Hannah and Michelle had delivered Dorothy and Faye's coffee and cookies, they went back to their own booth to start the second big pot of coffee. It was cold outside, and the people who arrived at the convention would want something to warm them up, especially if they hadn't had time for a leisurely breakfast before they drove to the Lake Eden Inn. As it turned out, it was a very good thing that they'd made advance preparations. When Sally unlocked the wide door to the convention hall, there was a line of customers waiting to get in. People entered in droves, starting at one side of the huge space and stopping at any booth that caught their interest until they got to the cookie jar booth. The smell of fresh coffee must have been enticing, because almost every shopper stopped for coffee and cookies, carried them to Sally's decorated food court, and munched and sipped until they regained their energy for more shopping. Then they walked past the booths beyond the cookie jar booth, crossed to the other side, and didn't stop again until they'd reached the halfway point. That was when they went back to get their second cup of coffee and more cookies from Hannah and Michelle. The line at the cookie jar booth seemed endless, controlled only by the speeding with which customers finished examining and purchasing from the booths that caught their interest. Of course, they needed something to go with the beverage of their choice, and dozens of cookies and bar cookies were consumed. When the line finally diminished, Hannah glanced at her watch. "It's only 12:05, she exclaimed. "I thought it was much later than that."
"So did I." Michelle reached up to straighten her apron.
"Wave, Hannah. There's Andrea across the way from us. She's here with Tracy. They must have had a half day at school today. And there's Grandma McCann with Bethy."
"I hope they come over to say hi. I want Andrea to taste one of our new bar cookies."
"Which one?" Michelle asked. "We have several."
"We'll give them all a different one and they can compare them. Do I need to put on more coffee just in case we get a noon rush?"
"I just made it. Do you realize that we've gone through 8 large pots of coffee, and I don't know how many cookies and bar cookies? We sold all my orange marmalade-filled oatmeal muffins, too."
Hannah turned around to assess the packaged cookies and bar cookies that they had left. "We've gone through over half of our baked goods already. I'd better call Lisa and see if they have any extras they can spare."
Chocolate caramel bar cookies. Preheat oven to 325 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position. The crust and topping. 2 cups, 4 sticks, 16 ounces, 1 pound, salted butter, softened to room temperature. 1 cup white granulated sugar. 1.5 cups powdered confectioner's sugar. 1/4 cup cocoa powder. I used Hershey's. 1/2 teaspoon salt. 1 tablespoon vanilla extract. Tablespoon is not a mistake. 3¾ cups all-purpose flour. Pack the flour down in the cup when you measure it. The caramel filling. 12¼-ounce by weight jar caramel ice cream topping. I used Smucker's. 1/8 cup whipping cream. 1 cup, 6-ounce bag by weight, semi-sweet chocolate chips. I used Nestle. 1/2 teaspoon vanilla extract, 2 teaspoons sea or kosher salt, the coarse ground kind. Before you begin to make the crust and filling, spray a 9-inch by 13-inch cake pan with Pam or another nonstick cooking spray. Alternatively, you can line the pan with heavy-duty foil and spray that. Then you can lift the bar cookies right out of the pan when they have baked and cooled. Hannah's first note. If your store doesn't carry jars of caramel ice cream topping, you can still make these bar cookies by using an 11-ounce bag of square Kraft caramels, counting out 35 pieces, unwrapping them, and adding a 6-ounce by weight bag of semi-sweet chocolate chips. Drizzle with 1/4 cup whipping cream and heat in the microwave for 1 minute, followed by another minute standing time. Try to stir the mixture smooth, and if you can't, heat for another 30 seconds, followed by 30 seconds standing time, and try again. Repeat heating and standing times until you can stir the mixture smooth. Combine the softened butter, white sugar, powdered sugar, cocoa powder, and salt in a large bowl or in the bowl of an electric mixer. This crust is easier to make if you use the mixer. Beat at medium speed until the mixture is light and creamy. Add the vanilla extract. Mix it in until it is thoroughly combined. Add the flour in half-cup increments. The last increment can be 3/4 cup. Beating at low speed after each addition. Beat until everything is thoroughly combined. Hannah's second note. When you've mixed in the flour, the resulting sweet chocolate dough will be soft. That's the way it's supposed to be. Measure out 1 rounded cup of the sweet dough. Wrap it in plastic wrap and put it in the refrigerator to chill. With impeccably clean hands, press the rest of the sweet dough into the bottom of your prepared cake pan. This will form a bottom crust. Press it all the way out to the edges of the pan, as evenly as you can, to cover the entire bottom. Bake your bottom crust at 325 degrees Fahrenheit for approximately 20 minutes, or until the edges are beginning to turn a deeper brown color. While the crust is baking, open the jar of caramel ice cream topping, take off the metal lid, and place the open, lidless jar in the microwave. Heat the contents on high for 20 seconds. Use potholders to take the jar out of the microwave. Depending on the power of your microwave, it could be too hot to handle. Dump, yes indeed, dump is a recognized cooking term, at least in my house. The warm caramel topping in a microwave-safe bowl. Hannah's third note. When I bake these at home, I always use my quart Pyrex measuring cup. Sprinkle the semi-sweet chocolate chips over the top of the caramel ice cream topping and pour the whipping cream on top of that. Give the contents of your microwave-safe container a stir with a heat-resistant rubber spatula. Listen for your stove timer. When your crust has browned a bit around the edges, remove the pan from the oven, but don't shut off the oven. Set the pan with your baked crust on a cold stovetop burner or a wire rack to cool. It should cool approximately 15 minutes, so set the oven timer for that length of time. After your crust has cooled approximately 15 minutes, place the microwave-safe bowl with the mixture of caramel topping, chocolate chips, and whipping cream in the microwave. Heat the caramel mixture for 1 minute at high power. Let the bowl sit in the microwave for an additional minute, and then try to stir the caramel, cream, and chocolate mixture smooth with the heat-resistant spatula or a wooden spoon. If you cannot stir the mixture smooth, heat it for an additional 20 seconds at high power. Let it sit in the microwave for an equal length of time, and then try again. Repeat as often as necessary, alternating heating and standing times until you achieve a smooth mixture. Once your chocolate caramel mixture is melted, add the half teaspoon of vanilla extract and stir until smooth. Do not add the salt yet. Hannah's fourth note. At this point, I always want to dip a spoon into all that rich goodness and taste. Resist that urge. You'll be able to scrape out of the bowl after you've added the mixture to your baking pan. Pour the chocolate caramel mixture over the baked crust as evenly as you can. Spread it out with the heat-resistant spatula so that it reaches the very edges of the pan. Here comes the salt. Sprinkle the 2 teaspoons of sea salt or kosher salt over the chocolate caramel layer in the pan. Take the remaining sweet dough out of the refrigerator and unwrap it. It has been refrigerated for 35 minutes or more, and it should be thoroughly chilled. With your impeccably clean fingers, crumble the dough over the caramel layer as evenly as you can, leaving little spaces for that yummy chocolate caramel to peek through. Return the pan to the oven and bake at 325 degrees Fahrenheit for 25 to 30 additional minutes, or until the caramel layer is bubbly and the crumbled crust is golden brown. Take the pan out of the oven, turn off the oven, and place the pan on a cold stovetop burner or a wire rack to cool. Resist the urge to cut just 1 chocolate caramel bar cookie to taste it. It will still be molten hot for at least another 25 minutes. When your chocolate caramel bar cookies are completely cool, cut them into brownie-sized pieces, place them on a pretty platter, and serve them to your guests. I can practically guarantee that everyone will rave about them. Chapter 27. I'm here. Norman walked up to the cookie jar booth at 12 noon, the exact time that Hannah and Michelle had asked him to come.
Oh, good, Hannah said, beaming at him. Where did you park your car?
Right by the back door in the spot for deliveries. Sally said there wouldn't be any more deliveries today, so I could park there. Just teach me the ropes, and I'll handle the booth alone so you two can go to lunch. Sally has a great buffet lined up in the dining room.
Hannah and Michelle exchanged glances. It's okay. I don't need lunch right now, Michelle said.
Michelle's response made Hannah smile. The sisterly radar was working, and they were definitely on the same wavelength.
Neither do I, she told him. Michelle and I have something more important than manning the booth for you to do, if you're willing.
I'm willing, Norman said, without even asking what it was.
Could you drive back to the cookie jar to pick up the extra cookies that they baked for us? We've already gone through over half of our supply, and the doors don't close until 5.
I can do that. But how about your lunch break?
We'll take it once you get back and we unpack the cookies. It's not like there's nothing to eat here.
That's true, Norman agreed, looking around at the display of partially filled cookie jars. I'll head for town, then.
Wait a second, Hannah called out as Norman turned to go. How about a go-cup with coffee for the road?
Great idea.
Norman stood by the counter until Hannah filled a cup of coffee and clamped on the lid.
Thanks for thinking of that, Hannah. I'll be back as soon as I can.
The noon rush hadn't hit yet, and the two sisters relaxed for several minutes on the stools that Sally had brought for them. Michelle erased several items that were sold out from the menu she'd written, and Hannah wiped down the counter and put out more sugar, cream, and low-calorie sweetener. Now that there was no line, she was beginning to realize how tired she was from the morning's work, and she looked around at the decorations that Sally, Brooke, and Lauren had done so beautifully. Two huge Christmas trees sat in all their lighted splendor just inside the door to the convention hall entrance, one on either side. Tinsel hung from the branches, multicolored ornaments were strategically placed for maximum effect, and brightly hued mini-lights created a lovely glow that captured the spirit of the season to come. She was just wondering how Sally and her crew had moved such huge trees inside when she heard a soft giggle.
Hi, Aunt Hannah. Were you sleeping with your eyes open?
It was Tracy, and Hannah laughed. I might have been. I was concentrating on those beautiful Christmas trees by the door.
I do that all the time when I'm reading, Tracy confessed. My teacher calls it out to lunch.
That's a good description.
Hi, Hannah,
Andrea said, arriving at the counter. Tracy ran ahead of me.
That's because I'm a sprinter, Mom. There's no way you can keep up with me. Grandma McCann said she thinks I could run a mile in less than 4 minutes.
Tracy turned to Hannah.
That's pretty good, isn't it, Aunt Hannah?
That's very good. It was the record for a long time. Roger Bannister did it first in 1954.
How old was he?
Well, he was born in 1929, so...
25!
Tracy gave the answer almost immediately.
He was 25, Aunt Hannah.
Hannah was amazed, especially because Tracy was only in second grade. How did you subtract that so fast?
It's easy. All I did was say to myself, 29 is almost 30, and 30 from 54 is 24. Then, because you made him a year younger than he actually is, you add that year to your answer. It's easy, Aunt Hannah, because you can go up or down, whichever way is easiest. All you have to remember is to add to or subtract from your answer.
Andrea looked proud. Tracy's doing very well in math, she said quite needlessly.
Tell your Aunt Hannah your idea, Tracy. She might let us do it. Mom and I want to take care of your cookie booth for an hour, while you and Aunt Michelle go to the lunch buffet, Tracy said. We already went, and we really want to do it, Aunt Hannah. I need the practice.
Hannah didn't dare look at Michelle. She was almost sure her youngest sister was biting her lip, trying not to laugh. Why do you need the practice, Tracy?
Because it's a career path. I don't know what I want to do when I grow up, but I like to bake, and maybe I can open a cookie shop someday. If I do that, it'll be good practice for me to wait on your customers today.
I see. Somehow Hannah managed to maintain a straight face. Tracy was unique. She'd never met any other second graders who wanted to practice for a career path. Well,
Mom says you have to eat, so it's a perfect opportunity for me. And you and Aunt Michelle don't have to worry that I'll do something wrong, because Mom will be right here with me.
What do you think, Michelle? Hannah asked, hoping that Michelle had recovered at least part of her equilibrium.
I think we should help Tracy out with this, Michelle said. And I am hungry.
So am I, Hannah said, silently praising Michelle for her serious demeanor. If it's okay with your mom, it's fine with us, Tracy.
Oh, goody! Tracy turned to Andrea. I told you they'd let us, Mom!
Then she turned back to Hannah.
I bought something for Grandma McCann for an early Christmas present. I'm going to give it to her as a consolation prize when we hold the gumdrop Christmas tree contest. Bethy and I are going to do it together this year, so we're bound to win.
You have a gumdrop Christmas tree contest? Michelle asked.
Yes, it's really fun. Mom bought us a plastic gumdrop tree with little
Tracy struggled for the word, and Hannah decided to help her. Protrusions? Hannah asked her.
Yes, that's it. Good for you for knowing such a big word, Aunt Hannah. Anyway, Bethy is going to hand me the gumdrops, and I'm going to put them on the protrusions on the ends of the branches. Grandma McCann has a plastic tree, too, and she's going to race against us.
That sounds like fun, Michelle commented.
It will be if Bethy doesn't eat all the gumdrops when she takes them out of the bag. She won't eat the purple ones. She doesn't like those. But I don't think we can win with a tree that's all purple. Take a look at Grandma McCann's consolation prize, Aunt Hannah. I want to know if you and Aunt Michelle think she'll like it.
Hannah took the bag that Tracy held out to her and peeked inside. Then she lifted the tissue-wrapped contents from the bag.
It's a cookie ornament for our real Christmas tree, Tracy told them. I thought it was supposed to be a raisin cookie at first, but the man in the booth told me that it's a chocolate chip cookie. Grandma McCann bakes those for us, and they're really good.
Tracy stopped speaking and looked a bit anxious.
They're not as good as your cookies, Aunt Hannah, but that's to be expected because you're a professional.
Hannah was careful not to laugh. I'm sure they are very good, Tracy. She unwrapped the ornament and held it up so Michelle could see it. It's pretty, Tracy.
Yes, and it's handmade in Minnesota. The man who sold it told me that handmade things are even more valuable.
Hannah held the ornament in her hand and turned it from side to side. She happened to look at the bottom as she was turning it, and she noticed something that made her curious. There was a tiny label stuck on the bottom of the cookie ornament. She pulled it off, assuming that it was the price tag, but it wasn't. The label read, "Made in China," in tiny red letters. "Where did you buy this, Tracy?" she asked.
"From your neighbor over there," Tracy pointed to Gary's booth. "He was really nice to me, and he gave it to me for half price when I told him it was for Grandma McCann."
"That was nice of him," Hannah said, sticking the label deep in her apron pocket. Tracy was clearly delighted with her purchase, and Hannah wasn't about to disillusion her. She'd decide what to do about the sticker later.
"All the ornaments he sells are handmade right here," Tracy told her. He said his sister sells them in her shop on consignment. That means the person who makes the ornament agrees to let her sell it in her shop and to give her a commission, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. Hannah rewrapped the ornament in the tissue, put it in the bag, and handed it to Tracy. You can keep it on the shelf behind the counter while you're working.
Thanks.
Tracy turned to Andrea again.
Let's take their aprons and let them go to lunch, Mom. All the prices are on the whiteboard, and we know which cookies they are.
Several minutes later, after some basic instructions and tying a towel around Tracy's waist because the aprons were too big, Hannah and Michelle walked away to go to lunch.
I saw you take something off that ornament,
Michelle said when they were far enough away so that Tracy and Andrea couldn't hear her.
What was it?
A label that read Made in China. Gary did tell us that all his sister's ornaments were handmade in Minnesota, didn't he?
He did. Michelle began to frown. I wonder why he lied about that.
I don't know. I wonder about that, too. But that's not all that concerns me.
What else concerns you? Michelle stepped inside the dining room and led the way to an empty table.
I'm wondering what other things he's lying about. People who lie generally have something to hide. So even more important, what does Gary have to hide?
Only seconds passed until Dot, who was working in the dining room, saw them and came rushing over.
How's it going in the convention hall, girls?
It's going well, Michelle told her. We're close to running out of cookies. We had to send Norman back to the cookie jar for more.
Who's taking care of your booth?
Hannah smiled.
Tracy and Andrea. Tracy said she needed a career path, and it was a good opportunity for her.
Dot laughed.
That sounds like Tracy. I really enjoy it when they come out here for dinner. She's precious, and so is Bethy. Are you two here for the buffet?
We are, Michelle told her.
Plates are up there, and I'll get you silverware and napkins. Just help yourselves when you're ready. What would you like to drink? Drinks are included, unless it's wine or beer. Then it costs extra.
I'll have club soda with a wedge of lime, Hannah told her.
The same for me. I've had enough coffee to float a battleship.
Is Sally around? Hannah asked Dot.
She's around here somewhere. Would you like me to locate her and tell her you want to see her?
Yes, please. I have a question to ask her, and it may be important.
Dot's eyebrows shot up.
You mean it's about the... She stopped speaking. Never mind. I think I know what it's about. I'll go find Sally while you fill your plates.
Sally came up to their table just as they had almost finished their lunch.
Dot said you had something important to ask me.
We do. Hannah glanced around. The people at the table closest to them had finished their lunch and left, and there was no one else within earshot.
It may have to do with PK's murder, but we're not sure yet.
What is it?
Gary mentioned that his sister was in the hospital in the cities. You don't happen to know which hospital that is, do you?
Sally shook her head.
Gary didn't say when he called to reserve the booth for his sister.
Hannah stored that information away for future reference.
So you've never spoken to Gary's sister?
No. I do know her name, and the name of her store, though. Gary gave it to me over the phone. Will that help?
Yes, Michelle told her.
Her first name is Violet, and her store is called Many Hands. Violet sells local handmade items on consignment.
Is Violet's last name the same as Gary's? Hannah asked.
I think Gary said she was married, and when they divorced, she kept his last name. I don't remember it, but I might have written it down on the booth application. Do you want me to look it up for you?
Yes, please, Michelle answered.
You don't know where Many Hands is located, do you?
Sally started to shake her head, but then she stopped.
It's in Minneapolis, but Gary didn't give me the street address. I could ask him if you want it.
No, that's okay, Hannah said quickly. If we need it, we can get it from directory assistance. It sounds like an interesting store, and I was thinking of dropping by there the next time I get to Minneapolis.
Does Gary run Many Hands with Violet? Michelle asked Sally. I asked him that, and he said no, that Violet has an assistant who comes in part-time, and the assistant was keeping the store open for Violet until she got out of the hospital.
Thanks, Sally, Hannah said. You've helped a lot already.
Sally looked a bit uncomfortable.
You don't suspect Gary of sending that drugged candy to KCOW, do you?
Gary's not on my suspect list, Hannah said quite truthfully. Michelle and I were just interested in learning more about him.
Yes, Michelle said. Both of us think it's very nice of him to come here and run his sister's booth. He seems like a nice enough guy, Sally said.
Nice enough? Hannah questioned Sally's choice of words.
Do you have some reservations about Gary?
Well, not really. It's just that some things about him are slightly...
She stopped and began to frown.
I was going to say odd, but that's not really the right word. Curious is closer to what I mean.
What do you find curious? Hannah asked her.
Well, he came here a week before I asked my vendors to arrive. He said he just wanted a little respite before he began to unload his sister's ornaments and prepare her booth for the convention.
Did you ask him why he needed a respite? Michelle asked.
No, I didn't want to pry into his personal life, but when I thought about his situation, I could understand why he might need a respite.
Hannah thought she knew what Sally's reasoning was, but she was silent, waiting for Sally to explain.
I think Gary wore himself out staying with his sister in the hospital, and now that she's recovering, he needed a little time to himself.
Was Gary his sister's only visitor? Michelle asked.
Heavens, no. But I think Gary felt obligated to be there. He told me that all her friends and clients came to see her, and she had so many visitors that the charge nurse had to limit the time they could spend in her room.
Hannah nodded. I can understand that. Too many visitors can exhaust a patient. How about Gary and Violet's parents? Did they visit her, too?
No. They were in Europe visiting his aunt, and since Violet's injury wasn't life-threatening, Gary didn't want to tell them and spoil their overseas visit.
What was Violet's injury? Michelle asked.
She fell on the ice and broke her leg. Gary told me that he didn't leave her until she was moved to the rehabilitation center. Then she told him that everything was okay and she had plenty of people who had come to visit. She said she wanted him to take some time for himself before the convention started, and he had to take care of her booth.
So he came here early, Hannah concluded.
Yes, I gave him a nice suite with a view of the lake. And he stayed to himself for the first day or two, ordering meals from room service and just sitting in an easy chair by the window.
He was probably tired from taking care of Violet, Michelle said.
Yes, I think so. But then he seemed to recover, and he started coming down to the restaurant for meals. He's fine now that he got his energy back, and he calls his sister at the hospital every day.
From the phone in his suite? Hannah asked, hoping that she could get the number of the hospital from the phone records.
No, there are no charges to his room for phone calls, so he must use his cell phone.
Sally paused and looked at her watch.
Go get some dessert, girls, and I'll tell Dot to clear your table and bring you coffee. I've got several things on the dessert buffet that you might want to try.
Hannah laughed. I might want to try them all, but I don't think I'd better do that. I'll limit myself to 3 samples.
A wise decision. We'll have the same choices tomorrow, and you can try another 3. I'll run back to the office to get a copy of Violet's booth application and bring it out to you. That way, if I wrote it down, you'll know her last name.
Chapter 28 Thanks for packing up, Norman, Hannah said as Norman came back to the cookie jar booth. He'd carried the leftover cookies out to Hannah's cookie truck for them and left 2 dozen behind in case they were last-minute sales to handle.
It's almost 5 o'clock, Michelle told them after checking the time on her cell phone. Let's throw out the trash on our way to our cars.
I'll do it, Norman offered, lifting the bag out of the container under the counter. Do you two have any plans for dinner?
Hannah shook her head.
Not really. I thought we'd pick up some takeout on the way home.
Would you like to join us, Norman?
Yes, but let's not do takeout. I have another idea. I've never eaten in at Lanse Palace. All we ever do there is pick up Chinese takeout. Instead of takeout tonight, let's actually eat in their dining room.
That sounds good, Hannah said, and then she turned to Michelle. Do you want to have dinner there?
Yes, I've never been in their dining room either. Andrea described it, and it sounded nice.
Norman looked pleased.
Then I'll meet you there in a few minutes, unless you have to go home first and feed Moishe.
Hannah shook her head. Moishe doesn't expect his dinner until after 6 at night. That's the earliest I usually get home from work.
Okay, then. I'll drive straight there and get us a table. Do you want me to put in an order for an appetizer?
Yes, Michelle looked delighted. Let's have shrimp rolls. I've always wanted to order those, but the woman at the takeout desk told me they don't travel well.
Hannah? Norman turned to her.
I'll have a shrimp roll, too, Hannah told him.
How about drinks? Shall I order those for you?
That would be nice. Iced tea for me, if they have it, Hannah decided. And if they don't, I'll have lemonade or any other fruit drink.
Same for me, Michelle told him. We'll just wipe down the counters and then we'll close up and meet you there.
Hannah pulled up in front of Lanse Palace less than 15 minutes later. Traffic had been light and it had stopped snowing, so visibility was good.
I think it turned colder, Michelle commented as she got out of Hannah's Suburban.
It does feel colder than it did this morning, Hannah agreed. I'd better plug in my cookie truck.
Michelle waited, stomping her feet to stay warm, as Hannah attached the cord she'd wound around her front bumper to the electrical strip that ran all the way around the side of the building. Then the two sisters walked to the entrance and opened the outside door.
I love the blue mirrors on the front, Michelle said, stepping into the warmer area between the outer door and the door to the interior of the restaurant.
So do I, Hannah said, chuckling a bit as she hung up her parka in the cloakroom and switched her boots for the moccasins she'd carried in with her.
Do you remember when Andrea told us that she'd been here when she was in high school and it was called the Watering Hole?
Yes, and Mike asked her why she was there when she was underage, and Andrea had to make up that ridiculous story about just coming in to call for help because Bill's car had broken down?
Once Michelle had switched to her street shoes, they walked into the toasty warm interior of the restaurant itself. They spotted Norman sitting at a booth by the window and went over to join him.
Just in time, Norman said as they slid into the horseshoe-shaped booth. Adam came by to say the shrimp rolls would be here in a minute or two.
As they sipped their drinks and waited for the shrimp rolls to arrive, Hannah told Norman about the ornament that Tracy had shown her, and how they'd gotten Gary's sister's name from Sally.
Are you going to call Violet at the hospital and ask her why she has ornaments in her store that aren't handmade? Norman asked.
No, Hannah said. That's not really the important thing. The real question is why Gary lied to Tracy and to us when he mentioned the ornaments.
Did you ask him about that?
Michelle shook her head.
We decided not to. Hannah didn't want him to know that we'd stumbled on his lie.
Norman's eyes narrowed slightly as he turned to Hannah.
So Gary's about to join the other suspects on your list?
Hannah shrugged.
Maybe. I have a couple of things to check out first.
Like what?
Like whether his sister is really in the hospital. But first we have to find out which hospital it is. All we know is that it's in the cities.
Norman smiled.
I can do that for you if we stop by my place. I've got a really fast online connection, and I'll print out a list for you. Or if you'd like, I can help you call the hospitals to ask.
That would really save time, Michelle told him. Then there'd be three of us calling.
Michelle's right, Hannah agreed. If you'll get that list for us and come to the condo with it, we'll all work on making those phone calls. And bring Cuddles.
Dr. Bob said that all Moishe's tests came back just fine, and he's perfectly healthy. He even lost 1.5 pounds, and that's good.
So Dr. Bob wasn't worried about the Moishe flop?
Not at all. Sue said that if there were anything wrong, Dr. Bob would have found it.
I'm sure that's right, Norman agreed. I'll bring Cuddles, and with all three of us calling, it shouldn't take long to locate the right hospital.
If she's actually in the hospital, Hannah reminded him.
Right.
Norman looked up to see Adam Wang coming out of the kitchen door.
Here comes our order of giant shrimp rolls.
Are the rolls with shrimp giant, or does giant refer to the shrimp?
Michelle asked.
I posed that same question to Adam when I ordered them, Norman told her. The shrimp are giant shrimp. And I'm going to order 2 giant shrimp without the rolls to take back for Moisha and Cuddles. Once she'd ordered the rest of her meal, Hannah glanced around at the decor. The dining room was lovely with pale green booths lining the walls and ebony tables in the center. A chandelier hung from the center of the ceiling, casting a soft light over the interior. It was made of cylinders covered with something that reminded Hannah of rice paper. Some cylinders were longer and others were shorter, and they were arranged in a pattern that made them resemble the petals of a mammoth flower. The muted light cast a soft glow on the honey-colored floor. Even the window treatments added to the serene feel. The plate glass was covered with ebony wooden-framed panels of printed silk so thin that it was almost possible to see outside, but not quite. The print on the silk was done in muted colors, and the design was of pink cherry blossoms with pale green leaves. There were large prints of flowers on the walls. Soft music was piped into the room, and the serving dishes picked up the color of the cherry blossoms in the panels that covered the windows.
Lovely, Hannah breathed, not even realizing that she'd spoken aloud.
Yes, isn't it? Michelle agreed. I'm glad we finally came in to eat here. It's very relaxing.
Their main dishes arrived, delivered by Adam and his wife. Hannah felt a sense of déjà vu as the succulent food was placed on the table.
It's just like at home when we unpack the takeout, she commented once Adam and his wife had left the table.
We ordered too much food, Michelle guessed.
Right. We won't have to worry about dinner tomorrow. There's no way we can finish all this food, and we'll be taking it home to enjoy tomorrow night.
Let's see if Moisha will be more active today, Hannah said, motioning for Michelle to stand in front of the outside door to the condo. Michelle braced herself and prepared for Moisha to race out the door and jump into her arms.
I bet he will be. He's been waiting at least half an hour for his dinner.
Hannah retrieved her keys from her purse and inserted the door key in the lock. She turned it, opened the door, and stepped quickly to the side. Nothing. Absolutely nothing happened. There was no sound of Moisha rushing down the hallway, no welcoming yowl, and no leap into Michelle's waiting arms.
Looks like you were wrong, Hannah said. Let's go wake him up and give him his dinner. He'll perk up when Cuddles comes.
After Michelle had closed and locked the door behind her, they heard a noise from the bedroom. Then there was a thump as Moisha jumped off the bed, and a moment or two later, he padded into the living room, yawning.
"Were you sleeping?"
Michelle asked the obvious.
"Meow,"
Moisha answered her. Then he jumped up to the back of the couch and looked at Hannah expectantly.
"Okay," Hannah told him, reaching out to pet his soft fur and giving him a scratch behind his ears. "Michelle will get your kitty treats and then I'll feed you. How's that?"
The answer this time was a loud purr, and Hannah thought, not for the first time, how Moisha truly appeared to understand what she was saying.
"You're going to have shrimp later tonight. Norman is bringing Cuddles to play with you."
The response was loud and prolonged, and Hannah laughed. "That's right. Cuddles and shrimp, your favorite combination. You two can eat and play until Norman, Michelle, and I finish making phone calls." Moisha turned to Michelle, who was coming in from the kitchen with a canister he recognized. It contained the fish-shaped, salmon-flavored kitty treats that were his favorites.
"I'll put some food in his bowl, and then I want to take a quick shower," Hannah told Michelle. "It'll only take me a few minutes, and then you can shower if you want to."
"I want to," Michelle said. "I feel a little grubby after working all day." "Go ahead, Hannah. When you leave, I'll put on a pot of coffee and check the answering machine to see if Mike called. Fingers crossed his team has found Ross's storage locker and discovered some clue to where Ross went and why he left in the first place."
The smell of fresh coffee was an incentive to hurry as Hannah emerged from her shower. She dressed in a clean pair of sweatpants and a sweatshirt.
ran a brush through her hair, and went down the hallway to the kitchen to get a cup.
"My turn," Michelle said, gesturing toward the kitchen. "I poured a cup for you and set it on the counter."
"Anything on the answering machine?" Hannah asked.
"No call."